Does your life need a tune-up? Or does it need a complete overhaul? A few years ago, Dave MacArthur was a mechanic, and now he's a millionaire. Now, part of the Kick-Ass Life Podcast Network, it's the Mechanic to Millionaire Podcast, where Dave teaches the techniques he used for success in a down-to-earth, practical way you can implement into your own life. Listen on Mondays and Fridays on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at mechanictomillionaire.com.
G'day, this is Stuart Emery, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So, hello, and welcome to the show. It's Thursday. Actually, I'm not telling the whole truth. And you know what? I'm all about truth, right? It's Wednesday. But I'm going skiing with the kids, and so I am not going to be, hopefully, working tomorrow because I'm going to be bombing down the ski hill. So I decided I would take a few minutes right now and sit down and have a chat. And catch up. It's Thursday for you, and as I'm doing this, it's Wednesday. And Jen and the kids have just run out to get the skis tuned up as we're preparing to go. And it's funny, you know, because sometimes I sit down and I really sort of plan out what's going to happen, and that's not as common as feeling what it is I want to chat about today. And I pretty much go with the feeling because I trust it. And I don't know why this has come up today. I'm not sure what's triggered it. I'm not sure, you know, what was happening in my mind to make me think this way. I don't know if there's something I've seen or heard or a song I've heard that's maybe triggered this whole thought process. But I want to talk a little bit about two things. One is death, actually. And it's funny, you know, when you say it, the word death, it has this connotation for so many people that it can be fearful, it can be morose, it can be dark, it can be many, many things. But for me, it's always about lightness. I always feel very light when I think of death. I always think that light is the only certainty. What do they say? Taxes and death are the only two things you're certain of. But really, one of the only certainties I know about, that I know that for certain I'm going to die, for certain you're going to die. And I suppose the big uncertainty for most of us is whether we're really going to live. And so I want to explore two parts of my conversation today, because they're quite different conversations. And I don't know why I'm thinking both of them at the same time, but normally it's because I'm a little schizophrenic. No, I mean, no, but because I'm a little bit like that. You know, I kind of, my mind wanders all over the place, and apparently people seem to like it. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep listening. And by the way, you know, I was a little tear this morning. I actually went into the American iTunes account. It was about 174 of you have left comments. Yet I was reading some of the later ones. You know, as the show's been on the air, it's actually, you know, it actually brings me a little tears at the corner of my eye. What seems to be happening for people, this real shift, you know, really deep change in the direction of their thinking and their lives and how they're treating people. I think that's what I see a lot, is how much kinder people are becoming as they listen to the show, and more tolerant and less judgmental of themselves and others. So I'm very proud, and I really want to thank those of you that have taken the time. I know it's a pain in the neck to go on iTunes and do this, because it's not intuitive to leave a comment. And unfortunately, I can't see all the other countries, which makes it weird. You know, I can see Canada because I have a Canadian computer, and I have a computer registered in the U.S., so it means I can see Canada and the U.S., but all the other countries, I have no idea what people are writing down. But it would be so great to have it all under one shelf, and I'm sure iTunes, if you're listening, I don't know if you do or not, but that would be very, very cool. But those of you that haven't yet, if you can take a moment and write them in there, because it does do something. And I don't read them very often, but when I do it, I've read all of them. But when I do it, it helps. I think it really helps. And knowing what's going on and knowing what's happening in direction, I think it's almost like a compass. So I think it's more important than you think. It's not because I need a pat on the back, because, you know, it's more than that. It's bigger than that. And the other thing is, it obviously helps for ratings as well, right? And so if you can, you know, 174 of you of the thousands and thousands and thousands that listen is not a lot, really, in comparative terms. But anyway, enough of that. I really want to get down to the subject at hand. And I want to talk about this whole subject of death because, you know, it's interesting. I think those of us that, and I say us because I'm actually, you know, I'm not in this camp, but those of you maybe who haven't experienced the loss of someone close to you, you know, the certainty is, unless you go first, you are going to. And how does that have to be? You know, how do we go through life with this false expectation that everyone's going to live? And without the realization that, no, it's true. True is, everyone's going to die, and it could be today. I mean, there's that wonderful saying, you know, live every day as if it's your last, and one day you'll be right. And I really feel that. You know, when I hug and kiss my boys goodbye, I even talk to them about it. I said, you know, I know this sounds morose, and, you know, I get all of the jargon that people can say now, don't think these thoughts, but I think my other thoughts are so much more powerful that I can say these things without it being weird. But I often say if we're in a hurry, I say, look, you know, if I was to die in a fiery crash today, would that be the way we should say goodbye? And we'll just take a moment and look at each other, and I give my boy, I still kiss my boys, and 15 and 13. And I really want to be in that moment because, you know, how many times have you heard that story? You know, someone running out the house late or arguing and then something happens, a car accident or whatever, right? And so I just would prefer, I think, to think that a kick-ass life practitioner has a relationship with death that's so sexy and so alive and so fun. Because we know it's there. We know it's right there. It's right in front of us. It's like inches from our face. Inches from our face. And because it's inches from our face, you know, we're willing to live fully in the inches that are left. And we're willing to fight for those inches that are left, really, and live and squeeze the juice out of them. And that's why I think the drive to live so much more fully and more beautifully is there, because suddenly now we know that death is our dance partner. It's the one that we're certain of, right? And as we look death in the eye and we dance with her or him or however we want to call it, right, there's an embrace and understanding that it's okay. It's okay. You know, I want that last breath to be, I want to defy the odds and be giggling as I die, you know, a big chuckle. I always, you've heard me do this many times, that big last gasp of air, what a rush. All right. And I've always said on my tombstone, not that I want one, but on a tombstone, I'd love it to say, now do you believe I'm sick? Just people walking through the cemetery and seeing that. But of course, those of you who have lost someone, right? I get it. Cause I lost a 10-year-old in our family. My brother died a few years ago at 51. So, I mean, it's not like I've been without loss, people close to me, but losing a child is something that was remarkable to go through. And, you know, but I you know, Eric Clapton, I remember when his son died. I don't know if you know that that wonderful song he wrote, Tears in Heaven. And, you know, I mean, his son was only small, and Eric was a late father, and his son was playing by a window that had a screen on and fell out of, you know, multiple stories. I don't know the exact thing. But when you listen to his words, and he looked back on his life and the things that went on for him, you know, but, I mean, listen to this song.
Hold my hand.
of a father. I get emotional every time I hear this. You know, I remember watching him sing this with just him and his guitar, and his unplugged album. But you know, just where he felt that he didn't deserve to be there with his son. You know, and it was just this this beautiful song. But you know, having gone through that, you know, the idea that you know the people in our lives are going to go, and they may go younger. I have two sons. I've always lived with the idea that you know, I mean, I'd love to think I can outlive them, but there's always a chance I can't. But I'd rather allow them to live their lives fully and you know, understand that this is just something we have to move into, something we have to accept. And but I know there's people who've lost someone. And you know, the mother of the 10-year-old girl I'm talking about, Jessica, I mean, we're talking about years and years and years of absolute, you know, heartbreak. And even though she had another son, you know, and so being a witness to that and being a part of that journey, I wonder if there's a way. And in one of my programs, Beyond Courage, I actually came up with this process, which maybe you should think about doing, and I think it's worthy of doing if you love anybody in your life, and if you want to leave a message. And I don't know where it came from when I first did it, but I came up with this idea. And the first year I did the program, I had people go out into the woods and with a partner, someone they didn't know, and they would film each other leaving a message that would be played at their funeral, something that would be put in the will or in the safe at the lawyer's. And so that when you pass away, you know, that there's this message from you and no one's to know about it. It's going into your will. It's going into your safe. And imagine at the funeral or before the funeral. And this is what was going through my mind. I thought it was a beautiful process. And of course I did it. And when the year later, I was in this process of sort of second guessing whether I should do it again. And I'm thinking, you know what, do I want it in? Do you think is it valuable? Da, da, da. Anyway, I was going through this doubt. And I wasn't sure of the resonance of it, whether it really was something, was just maybe my thinking, or whether it was something, you know, that was even more important. You see me, well, my mind wanders like that is because I'm trying to do two things at once here. And so, you know, the idea then is that we have this chance, right? Or I send these people out. See, I'm sorry, my iTunes account just went down. So we have this, we have these people go out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking about pulling it out of the program. Anyway, so what ends up happening was I decide, all right, you know, I'm going to keep it in. And this is a few months beforehand, and then I get a phone call from one of our participants whose husband at 42 was downstairs in the gym, has a massive heart attack and dies. And he'd been there the night at the program the year before with his wife. But what had happened at the program, he'd kind of launched himself into a kick-ass life. And he was someone who'd always been busy. They have two beautiful kids, and he was always, always busy. And you know, but what had happened after he finished the program, he started to really attack his bucket list, and they'd sent me photographs of him flying in a biplane, which was always on his bucket list, and they started to do things, and they started to really live life. It was this wonderful, wonderful sort of start to a new life, and then suddenly, boom, he's gone. And so then she says to me, you know, obviously she goes, wakes up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, remembers that there's this DVD of him. And so she goes and she gets it and she watches it. And in the DVD, she'd never seen it, of course. And he's telling her, you know, he loves her, and he's telling her these things. And then if you're watching this, I'm not here, and I want you to carry on, and I want you to be happy, and I want you to find somebody else. I mean, all these things that you kind of don't know, right? And so she asks if she can come back to the event the next year and share his DVD and help me with this process again. And now her children have both come to the program. I imagine this, right? And so we have this wonderful experience now where I realize why this is so important. I didn't at the time when I wrote it. And when it comes to this piece now, when people, you know, I set it up. It's the same as the year before. I set it up the same way with the same context. Now I'm obviously really deeply entrenched in it. Now I know that one person has had this experience because that's what it was set up for. And I saw the good it did, right? And so then I said, well, but I want you to, and then I told him a story of this passing. And I asked Sandy to come up on stage, and she did. And she shared, and then we played his video. And then you could have just heard a pin drop. So there she is standing there, having lost a husband. And his words are right there talking to her with the kids in the audience. And you could feel the importance of this message, this thing to do, all right? And when people went out this time, it was palatable. And incredibly, one of the participants in that year was in a plane crash and passed away. And incredibly, what happened was his DVD was in the plane. So his wife and children never got to see it. And isn't that interesting? Because I always said, keep it in the safe with your will, put it in a fire safe somewhere, you know, and, it, you know, hopefully, you know, there'll be a time when you pass away that those words would resonate. And one thing I got my boys to do this for their mom. Now, she has no idea. I know she doesn't listen to the show. So if you know her, please don't pass this on to her. And so, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful exercise. And so, you know, I'm saying that as a kick-ass life practitioner, our dance with death is one where I think it's twofold. The one fold is this idea that we're not afraid of it, and that we are actually excited by the fact that it's going to happen, you know, in the sense that, I mean, why not look forward to it? If there's only a certain thing in your life, why not look forward to it? There was a book I read, and I can't remember. The guy was from Seattle, I believe. You know, and he told this story. It's a little red book, and I can't remember the title. But he'd gone out with his family and bought his plot where he was going to be buried. And it was a plot, and I remember the vision of it. It was a little bench, and it was overlooking this beautiful vista. And so his family, when they came to visit him, he wanted them to have a beautiful time. And so he went shopping for this plot with her. And there was this wonderful, wonderful build-up to this experience, you know, making it something that was something we could talk about, something that we could live, something that we could, you know, express as a family. And so again, there's something there. But the other part of a kick-ass life practitioner is that they're not encumbered by fear every time something comes up. Fear to try, fear to say yes, fear to go into the unknown, fear to try things they've never done, fear to, you know, to do things that put them a little bit on the edge. And I'm not talking about so crazy on the edge that they're, you know, they're obviously going to die. I mean, I'm just talking about most of us are so afraid of dying we don't live. I'm talking about not being afraid of dying so we can live fully and step into the dance of life and embraced with and looking death in the eye in that beautiful way. And so, you know, that was an experience that I feel is wonderful. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience, you know. And I know with Eric Clapton, when I think about him, I was going to do a whole show on this next piece, so I may still do that. So if you hear me talk about this again, don't be surprised. But, you know, one of the things with Eric Clapton, you know, he wrote that song, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. You know, there's that people who are actually in bodies right now that are completely dead. They're living a life that's dead. Now, I'm not saying Eric was like that, but when a guy gets down, this went through my head the other day, you know, because, you know, there's stuff going on in the world. You see people that are making mistakes and you know, they've done good things in their life and they make an error. Something goes wrong. And we don't know. But I mean, in this culture, especially not so much in Canada, but certainly in America, and I live in Canada, but I see it because I'm in the States a lot. You know, people are guilty until they prove themselves innocent. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that people are guilty first. And again, as kick-ass life practitioners, I always give people the benefit of the doubt. And because I'm not dilly-dallying in gossip, I don't. People ask me, like the guy who lost his legs and you know, was running in the Olympics and you know, apparently shot his wife or girlfriend or whatever it was. I mean, I have no opinion. Why would I have an opinion? There's nothing I can add to it apart from my own supposition. And based on what? A bunch of media people that are attempting to glamorize something, which is horrendous for everybody. And rightly or wrongly, I mean, I could have an opinion, but why would I have an opinion? And I think, again, as a kick-ass life practitioner, we don't need to have opinions on shit like that. I mean, what does it matter? I mean, he's either going to be found guilty or not. Either way, he's obviously dipped into something, a guy who's done so much for so many people in the sport. You know, and I haven't lived without legs my whole life. I don't know what it's like. Growing up in South Africa, I know I spent a lot of time in South Africa, and I know what that's like, but I'm not growing up there where there's an immense amount of fear. But I don't have an opinion. I don't need to have the opinion and sort of join one side or the other. And so, but I love this concept of Clapton when he wrote this song, and I want to play a little. And I don't know if you've ever listened to this song, but Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. It's like, you know, when he was high rolling it, you know, everyone, he had all these friends, but when he hit rock bottom and he's on drugs, he's going through his shit, you know, then people left him, and they left him fast because they didn't know he was going to come back. And there's that, what's that guy who won the Oscar, the wrestler, the movie, is it Mickey Rooney or something? I can't remember his name, but he went through the same thing where, you know, he was a great actor and he went hit rock bottom. He came back with the movie, The Wrestler. And, you know, when I look into his eyes and you can see the life on his face, you can see the etched into him, the stories of those long nights and the drugs and the alcohol and everything like that. But guess what? You know, I would hope that if you and I were friends, and when you hit the shit comes along in your life, which inevitably it does for all of us in some capacity, that I have a big enough heart to be there in through the worst times. It's so easy to be there when things are going well. But it's when it's not going so well, when we make those mistakes. And says, guess what? Let's say he did shoot her, right? And it was in a moment of rage. I mean, yeah, I don't want to condone it. But if this guy's in my life and I have a relationship, I want to understand it. At least I want to understand what pain must you be in? What pain must you be in that moment to pull that trigger? What's going on? So again, you know, I really... It irks me a little bit when how easy it is to kick when someone's down as opposed to reach out and just attempt in a moment to understand. But let's listen to Clapton sing about this. Lost all my good friends and nowhere to go. I get my hands on the dollar again. I'll hang on to it till that old. So true, eh? And you think about it probably in your own life, right? So easy to judge, right? And I've got some friends that have gone through some hard times the last few years. And I just think, you know, so what? You know, so what? It's. I mean, the only constant can be the friendship. You know, I mean, we're all going to have our peaks and valleys, our ups and downs, our low points and high points. But, you know, if you're a kick-ass like practitioner, you know, you'll be on all that. It's like, you know, you love, I mean, unconditional love is, I think it's almost an impossibility unless you're a brand new puppy or a little tiny baby, you know, because conditions are there. But I mean, when you think that if you become a wiser, a more open, kind-hearted person, then you think that unconditional love could be something we could attempt to be in. And that means don't have conditions. So the condition is, hey, you're screwed up big. The condition is, and I'm not saying what someone does is right, but I do understand. And the deepest part of my core, you know, when I think of someone like Adolf Hitler, who probably did the most damage in this world, that there was to hurt somebody that badly, you have to be hurt so badly. I mean, it has to line up. And I'm not saying it's right. It's absolutely not right. But I wonder what would happen if that guy had found one of my programs or somebody else's programs, especially, I mean, if he'd have been in the room last weekend in Toronto and spent 3 days there with us. I guarantee that there's not a chance he could have gone out and done what he did because it's just, that's why environment is such a critical piece, you know, and that we all need to really be really a cognitive of and aware of our environment and the role it plays, right? But as kick-ass life practitioners, then this dance with death, this wonderful journey called life, you know, that we can really, really, really just, you know, just really love. But then there's that wonderful idea that we can look death in the eye and just give it a little wink and be ready for it. I mean, because what happens if it's tomorrow, right now? Are you ready? And this is the other thing, you know, when my brother died and there was so much shit in his life, you know, for me to go in there and clean it up. And I'm talking about, even his house, I'm often aware of that. I'm thinking, if I die today, if I was someone rummaging through my drawers, I want it to be a nice experience because someone has to. And so I tell you, it wasn't the most pleasant experience I've ever gone through in my whole life, right? And it was a pretty dark experience in some ways. But, you know, this whole idea, are you ready? Because if you're ready for that, then can you step into life a little bit more? If you got all death sorted out, you know, what's going to happen? You communicate it clearly, right? You left your messages of love to people, so there's never any doubt, you know? And this is, you know, comes down to the other thing, right? You know, if you've got any shit going on with someone, anything, you know, it's like drinking poison, expecting them to die if you're holding on to it. Why not phone? It doesn't matter if they agree or if they apologize. It doesn't matter anything. Why not phone and clean that up too and just say, hey, because again, you know, it's so liberating. You know, it's liberating to open those doors of these relationships, the hard ones, you know, and again, when we come from that well of at least to understand that, you know, when two people aren't communicating, on two people, there's some energy going on, somebody's waiting for somebody to go first. And I think the whole world's waiting for somebody to go first. And I've said this so many times on the show, to smile first, to say hello first, to laugh first, to hug first, to apologize first, to reach out first, you know, to attempt to make sense first. And you know what? Once you let go of it, I think of it this way. Even if you step in, if there's something going on with a sister, an aunt, somebody where there's a dark energy, well, just reach out. Say, hey, listen, you know what? I just want you to know I'm sorry for my part of this. And, you know, even though we may not spend any time together, I just want you to know I love you, if that's what you need to say, if it's true. Or, you know, I just want you to know I want you to have a great life, but I carry nothing more inside of me, and I wish you the best. It could be any level. It could be a reach out for love, but you can't be attached to them saying or even being in that place because they're not there. You're listening to this show. Maybe this is what triggers you to go and do something like that and have the courage to step in and pick up the phone or to go and call or to send a letter or to wander around the corner. Maybe that's why you're doing it, but they haven't got there yet. So you don't expect them to go, oh yeah, suddenly, oh, I love you. But there's a good chance they will, but don't actually think they, I mean, I wouldn't bet on it, but at least you're not carrying anymore. So what you do is you take that energy out of you and it's out there now in a good way. And now what's left? There's a vacuum. And what can you fill it with? New friends, new love, new trust. Trust. I can't believe how many people distrust first. Why not fully trust first? I always trust 100%. Why not go in 100% trust? Let someone break your trust. And I always find often people treat me the way I treat them. You know, if I'm distrusting, there's distrust, right? But the thing is, just trust 100%. So what? You know, you can still take precautions without distrusting. You could still have agreements. You could still have lawyers do things and still trust 100%. But so often I see people in distrusting, you know, before they start. That doesn't make any sense. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, I'm babbling on here. And I think we should have at least, just at least one more song by Eric Clapton. What do you think? Much confusion. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hear my kids coming back in the car, which means just I got to get out of here. And when I look down, it's 28 minutes. That's not bad. Who knows? I may even finish on time. Well, you know, I enjoyed this one. I don't know where it came from, but it's come from somewhere. And I urge you to go and get that DVD player, find a little place in the woods. You don't have to have someone. They get a tripod, you know, and you know, think of the important people in your life that you want to leave a message to. Don't forget your grandparents, you know, and what's your message? What do you want people to know about you? And I tell you, it's a beautiful legacy piece. When someone's listening to you and you're in the grave, I think that's a pretty powerful thing, eh? I mean, you're already gone and you're talking from the place. And what do you want to sound like? Well, then imagine how you want to enter that place. Light, bright, ready. Ready! Just get ready, which means you got to get living today. You got to kick it up a gear. Honestly, we just got to kick it up a gear. Just got to step into it. Get that dance partner called death. Wink her in her eye, you know, grab her by the waist, grab her by the hand, and just dance this life away. You know, you can play a hoedown. All right. Listen, I will definitely see you on the other side. And that's got a different ring to it today, doesn't it? I'll see you on the other side. Yes, I will. And hey, thanks. You know, thank you so much. And by the way, I think the old the July week on the island, I think it's all sold out, but there may be one spot. Maybe two, but you can still get on the waiting list. I was, you know, until people have paid, we don't know. So if you want to come along to the island, hang out with me and some of my very beautiful friends for a week on a beautiful private island, let us know. Go on Facebook. We'll see if we can get you in. Anyway, I send my love to you. And don't forget, forgiveness is, it's not a hard thing to do. And, it's just a choice. So if you need to forgive someone, just go ahead and do it. See how you feel inside. I'll see you on the other.
That was kick-ass.